Welcome to Tactical Permaculture. I've worked on projects ranging from the poorest to richest clients, from inner cities to suburbs to farmlands to remote wilderness, from the eco-war front lines to celebrity backyards. In over 25 years of service to the earth and the community of life, I've learned that in the fight for sustainable survival, growing is half the battle. Please go to tacticalpermaculture.com to read my blog, watch my videos, view my photos, access web applications, and click on the join membership link to access exclusive features. March 2024, episode number 117. This is another blessed day of rain that I'm able to shift gears and catch up on projects that that I'm able to accomplish while staying sheltered from the rain, but without the solar power to be able to be using my solar powered office. So one of the tasks that I had been working on piecemeal over the course of, I don't know, a couple few months now, but never until today did I really get serious about optimizing the workflow of it. And it was pretty much just kind of a scattered, just adding to this process in a disorganized way, but knowing eventually I would get around to squaring it away and organizing it better. And what it is a extremely comprehensive, geographically compartmentalized and sort of zoned out, nested tree of a list of everything that I own that's a physical object, pretty much. And obviously, I mean, I have modest means and modest objects in my possession overall. I mean, technically I'm by most measures, even anywhere in the world, I'm barely sheltered and completely houseless, and in some people's vocabulary homeless. But I'm a nomad, so some of those terms may not apply. But in terms of being, I call it a truckstedder. I'm a truckstedder, and I have very modest footprint for what I own. And I've had this protocol I've set myself on years ago, where I said I want to develop land doing permaculture design, and I want most of what is mine to be shared ultimately, and for that to be living organic ecological systems that I established mainly with my own bare hands and with the help of others. But point being, the ratio of plastic objects and electronics and mementos and just frivolous, as seen on TV, stuff your garage filled with things you never even open or even know what they are, look at, or a lot of, what do they call them, tchotchkes and things like that. I mean, I get enough beauty from the garden and from wild nature and the sky and the sun and the moon, and I don't need a lot of clutter that is even from a sort of even a down-to-earth sort of clutter of your spiritual effects, if you will, if you have various ways of arranging things to sort of enhance your spiritual life. To me, again, that comes back to just, I'm surrounded by wilderness. I don't have to approximate it with putting things inside, indoors in a house that remind me of being outside. You know, there's no need to have paintings of beautiful landscapes. That's my view, that's my horizon. So with all that said, the idea of having a very minimalistic array of, shall we say, artificial objects, I wanted those objects to be whatever they were, whatever they had to be, to just basically be tools and equipment and the containers of food and water and medicine that I need to operate. So it's just as militaristic in the sense of no frills, nothing unless it's part of a mission of some kind, maybe a psychological operation, really there's not a lot of excess taken in terms of being ornate. And to me, that's an aesthetic in and of itself, the aesthetic of military minimalism. Because a lot of operations occur in the great outdoors, why would you need to embellish much? So, I mean, everybody's got their own take on things. Certainly, I know people who are off-grid and they're just extreme artists. And so everything is painted and everything is patterns and everything is, you know, it doesn't matter to them whether they're deep in wild nature or in a city, they're going to make, you know, artistic dwelling. I'm not so much inclined in that sense. I'm not a great fine artist. You know, I'm about getting things done and having just a simplistic way of doing it. And I've been, yeah, decluttering and purging and minimizing, giving stuff away. I mean, I'm a musician. I gave away all my instruments, you know, and I had nice gear over the years, you know, real serious, nice pro gear, a lot of it. And I knew I wanted to eventually give it away to the next generations, which I've done. I feel good about that. Sometimes I miss it, but I'm in a different chapter of my life. And those were all vessels or vehicles. I often think about when guitar was my main tool of choice, where did that take me in life? Where did it go? Oh, actually, geographically, it took me places. I went on tour. It helped me establish a name for myself. It got me other gigs. It got me in bands. Those took me places and opened new doors. And then I went, and then I evolved to being a drummer, and that did the same thing and led me different places. Then I went to electronic music, and that took me places. And if I stack it all up, even though, you know, none of those kits, if you will, those kits that I had, the whole setup, the Marshall half stack and the trap drum kit, you know, and then the digital audio workstation and the trimmings of that. Obviously, the digital audio workstation, that's more portable, and I didn't have to get rid of that, but I don't use it every day like I have in the past. And all of those things have scaled to get me to what I'm doing now and where I am now, which the main event and the main kit is the tools and equipment that I need to, on a daily basis, develop and maintain this permaculture site for my own sustenance and for the purpose of being able to teach and train others, and to eventually hand it down through my trust so that it can be sustained as a permaculture site that's a training site. And now the focus is really, I don't want anything, I don't need anything that is not part of that mission now. I don't want anything frivolous, I don't want anything I gotta worry about being damaged in the elements. And so, yeah, it's a very lean operational environment, and the tools, the gear, the appropriate protective clothing, everything is just sort of ruggedized. And also everything is following a protocol that I developed, I've had over the years, and it's kind of best practices to anybody who's a prepper. You should know where everything is that's going to be staged, pre-staged for bugging out, pre-staged to load out when stuff hits the fan. So you have these different scales. I even did a research paper calling it the applying permaculture zonation theory to preparedness, to where you have the scale of your body, what people would call everyday carry. That's like zone one, what you have on your person. Or you could even say zone zero is your skills, what you have in your mind, what's in your muscle memory. So you have what's inside of you, that's your skills and knowledge, that can, you can bet your life on that if you train well. And then there's the things you have in your, that you're wearing, that are in your pockets, that are within reach at all times, your everyday carry. And then next zone out would be the 72-hour emergency kit backpack, aka go bag or bug out bag. And then you would have the preps that you would store in your vehicle, or even your bicycle or motorcycle, but your mobility platform, the preps that go into that. And then school or workplace, the place you would spend the most time outside of the home. Then there's everything you have in your home. Then there's everything you have at a remote survival retreat, aka bug out location. And there's some nuance in between there, but I did a whole paper. I mean, it's nothing fancy, but it's just I elaborated on that little list. So if that is the entire, essentially the map of reality for a prepper, and without knowing it, I mean, most people's map would be, I don't prep at all, therefore my map is me freaking out because I have no skills inside my body. I have nothing on my body that's useful whatsoever. So I'm freezing and I'm unable to patch wounds or be of service to anyone else. And I'm just panicking and screaming and freaking out and going into shock while more organized people like first responders show up. And what do they have? Tons of skills, tons of kit on their person, tons of kit in their vehicle. They have access to hospitals and emergency centers at all scales. So you get the idea. It's almost like, the continuum. If you were a first responder of any kind, your kit is going to scale into the national level of the stockpiles of weapons and supplies all the way at the national level. If you're just a civilian like me, you got to have somewhere in between. And now keeping track of that stuff and keeping it orderly, I actually built a tool recently, a web-based tool to help people get into the mindset and to have a practical tool. So it's a teaching tool and a tool that actually works in its own right to help people do what I just did right now, which was to create a living list, a well-organized living list that can be relatively easily adjusted and navigated as you evolve and grow and move things around. But in order to keep track of the inventory of your supplies, where they are, where they live when you're not moving them or evacuating, where they go when you are evacuating, because some things, I mean, a lot of things in a bug out bag, they just live in that bug out bag. You're hopefully not stuffing it with stuff from drawers in an emergency. Hopefully you did that in advance and you keep track of rotating things that could go bad, like batteries and food and whatnot. And if you take anything out of it, you make note of it so that you replenish it before you need it. A lot of people will use a bug out bag for just camping and picnics and whatever things going on hikes or whatnot, you use things in it, but you got to remember to replace it. So to me, this is this process of, obviously, for me personally, minimizing down to just gear and equipment for the mission, and that is what I own, that's what's in my life, but then keeping track of it, maintaining it so you don't end up overbuying and having too much of something that you don't even need that much of, because you just, I mean, there's certain things I would say for me, it's stevia, liquid stevia, it's green tea, it's honey for making mead. Anytime I get a run of supplies, and I'm going to always add those types of items. I could never have enough, and because I never want to run out, and it'll be nice to always have plenty to share as well. But there's other things. I mean, yeah, I don't need to have a million of a type of battery that I almost have no... it's almost obsolete because we don't use those types of batteries that often anymore. So, you know, everyone's going to be different. Again, for me, I'm trying to make sure that that I don't buy something that I can't find, and I buy it and I have, I mean, there's a place for redundancy. Certainly, if it makes sense to have two or three of an item that if it wears out, it could be catastrophic. If it's not likely to wear out, it would be catastrophic if it did. Or if it is likely to wear out, and even if it's not catastrophic, I better have, you know, backups of that supply, because it would be lame of me not to have that squared away. But all of that, of course, is within reason. And if one budget line item eats into the budget of another, then I don't want to have excess at the expense of having any of something else that I need. So going through what I've done now, where I was just throwing things on the list, or adding things to the list more accurately, but as I toss things around, as I rummage through junk drawers and places and tool boxes and things, and I go, okay, if I'm going to dig for something and find it, I'm not going to make it a chore, a task, a mission to have to find it again. I want to inventory it. I want to know where it is. If it moves, I got to keep track of it. And slowly but surely, over time, there's only a few very small sort of areas in my physical footprint of a life. And of course, this is a similar process in the digital world. I mean, taking care of organizing file systems and whatnot, it's in a lot of ways just as important. So that's another story, but it's all part of the continuum of being in this mindset. But I'm pleased to say that as of today, some of the last nooks and crannies that had been unaccounted for, pretty much, I mean, there would be, I would say probably less than 5% of the objects that I own are not in this master list. Insurance companies, if you're able to insure the valuables that you own, or even just everything that you own, the more that you are able to inventory that, the more accurate your insurance payouts will be. If you had a flood, fire, theft, whatever you're covered by, if you have your property insured in that way. I don't have that type of insurance that I'm paying for someone to cover or an agency to cover, but I do like to have the notion that if I were the victim of theft or a natural disaster, that I would know what I need to replace. To me, it drives me crazy. It's like such a nightmare to think about losing things and then forgetting what they were and forgetting that I had those dimensions of capability, whether it's tools or weapons, whatever it is. I mean, whatever it is, even if I don't use it every day and therefore out of sight, out of mind, if I acquired it and I didn't intentionally give it away or dispose of it in some manner, I don't want to forget that it ever existed. And it'd be one thing to forget that I had it and buy it again. That's not as bad as to forget that you had it and then never get it again and then need it. And then realize, oh, yeah, that's probably something that got stolen when my car got broken into or whatever, and then I forgot that I even had it. So the utility of not just being able to find things in an efficient manner because there's an inventory, and beyond the ability to maintain the quantities of supplies within that inventory, to me, that another emergent property that's valuable is the idea that I just know what I use, what I need, what I have acquired in this life to get jobs done. And there's tools in a toolkit, any standard toolkit that may never get used ever, even once, but they're there, like a ratchet set, for example, in order to have the ability to not be in a situation, whether it's professional on a job site, I mean, money is time and you have to go to take a trip to get new tools, that cuts in, you know, that's going to cost you more than what the tools are worth if you would have bought them when you weren't doing a job and now you're losing money. But point being, I feel this sense of almost a feng shui empowerment to think about how there's no disordered, disorganized, uninventoried almost square inch of my physical footprint. Like I said, maybe, what was I going to say? Maybe 5% is left that could still be organized. And I am, even my junk drawers are inventoried at this point, you know, and I don't have much of them, but there are just assorted materials that don't really group well together. And then just kind of end up in more of an assortment arrangement. But I'd say my saving grace now is I got a lot of these real hardcore carabiners, and I hang things up as much as I can for a couple of reasons. One, they're out of the way. Two, they can be easily clipped on and clipped off for ease of use and for emergency evacuation procedures. And they're easy to keep track of. and they're visually, I can scan all the things that are hanging in my sort of truck steadying world, and I know that the procedure is not going to be me fumbling around, wondering where things are, hoping I don't leave something behind if I have to evacuate. It's just clip, 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 all down the line. If it's not clipped, it doesn't go. and if it's clipped and it's there and I see it, it doesn't. It's and it's time to go. It doesn't stay. If that makes sense. So, that's a form of it is field craft in the sense that I'm in a situation where the tactical situation could be one where I need to be in a defensive posture at any moment. And that's not because I'm paranoid or because I'm playing Red Dawn. It's because of my remoteness and my lone wolfing it. We're not a team doing a minimum of three people doing an 8-hour shift, watching each other while we sleep so that we can be very tactically disadvantaged while we sleep. I have to be tactically advantaged at all times, which means whatever I need to respond to a threat of any kind, whether it's the weather, whether it's wild animals, whether it's human beings of any kind, for me, this system of clipping everything with carabiners is very useful, very strategic and tactical. But yeah, all that stuff is accounted for. And then probably more interesting nuance to this is that it's not just a list of, everything that's in the back of the truck, everything that's in the front of the truck or whatever. I broke things down into sectors, basically, or zones where, let's say, a truck cab, for me, that's going to be basically what it ended up being when I accounted for everything, where everything's tucked away, essentially to make it to try to group things in some sense. I made it into the front seat area and the back seat area, the driver's side, the passenger side, and then what's below the seats or on the floor, and then what's on the seats, which obviously I'm being sure not to have anything in the way on the driver's side seat, but I can get away with putting stuff on the front passenger seat. I can get away with putting stuff on the back seat of the truck, although I tend to make that accessible for emergency sheltering, so I keep most of that clear on the seat. But then the whole floorboard of the back seat, that's all loaded with things, and even under the seat too, of course. So breaking that up into the passenger side, the driver's side, and the center, that's the sort of the sectioning that I developed. And then even things hanging in that, so there's things on the seat, there could be things hanging, there could be things under the seat, but it's just organized by front and back, essentially left, center, and right, and then passenger or driver, depending on how you want to slice that. But then, of course, in the truck bed, it's an extension of that concept of what's on the left side, what's on the right side, what's in the center, and whether you have a utility truck or a camper shell or just a regular flatbed, if there's stuff in there. I mean, I would hope people would apply this however they see fit, but for me, in order to reference for myself, or if ever needed, which I imagine I will as I have people here for training, and I say, hey, there's a map of everything with the list of where everything is, and if I ask you to grab a tool, I can reference a diagram and a list in an area and say, yeah, to use this map and grab that tool, you'll be able to find it. And that will be based again on breaking areas up into these sectors. So now I scaled that out to where tools are stored outside of in the outside site areas, and where what's going on with the trash and recycling area, and where materials are stored. So literally now, and I've kind of created this south to north progression. So I think what I am going to end up doing is using this computer assisted design software to literally recreate the layout of basically make a 3D model of my entire site, all of the areas where gear and equipment, everything that I own on the site that's part of the site project will be reflected, not just on this list, which gets hard to navigate. I am going to indent the subcategories within areas so that it's easier to navigate, like a folder. When you open a folder, file folder system, it kind of branches out so that you can have a sense of where you are relative. If you're however many levels deep you are in the folder system, you usually have a visual aid for that. So that's helpful in a sense, but I'm interested in taking that master list, indenting it for easier reading when it's just reading down a sheet of paper or a text file, but then taking that data and applying it to a 3D model where you could navigate the site and search for a tool or an item of gear or whatnot, and then it would highlight in its appropriate place, and you could navigate and zoom into it and then have a visual understanding. And part of me was saying, like, man, that's kind of indulgent. Why are you going to go to that extent? Wouldn't your time be better used doing something more constructive than that? I'm like, I thought about it and I said, yeah, that's a little bit of, it's a little bit indulgent in the sense that it's kind of fun to geek out thinking about doing that. And as I do it, it's going to be a lot of fun. But how can I justify that expenditure of time? Not that it's not fine to have fun for its own sake, but I do like to have that sort of analysis done, because this could be a sprawling thing that could never end. I mean, how detailed do I want to get? Do I want to be like Adam in Beetlejuice and make a scale model of the whole town? You know, I mean, I get that and I kind of want that. I kind of would really enjoy getting lost and escaping into that process. I will get in the zone doing it. That's why I'm worried. I don't want to have too much fun, because what if I spend all my time making the digital version of my site and nothing gets done on the site while I'm doing that? That's my fear. But realistically, the value add that I put to that is that thinking in the way that I have been training myself, self-teaching, based on what I know about what operators in the field of all types of elite military units, it's often stated across various branches of the military that those who are engaged in more elite operations, that it's a less is more quality, not quantity kind of thing. And they're not just out there doing a sort, being a blunt instrument of a faceless military sort of monstrosity, just rolling across the landscape, just doing very, very, being the pawns on the chessboard. These are the rooks and the bishop, and these are the more sophisticated players on the chessboard. What that means is they'll say they have less action, or less total number of operations once they get into this, sector of the field, into that elite sector. And what they spend most of their time doing, it's not what you see in movies. It's not what these sort of caricaturized depictions are. It's tabletop exercises, whiteboards, reading manuals, studying, working in a team room, and working up the mission for months, if not years in advance, sometimes building replicas of what's going to be seized in some sort of assault. So that was a sigh of relief to me, giving myself permission to say, yeah, really take time doing everything in life with that mindset of thinking through the what ifs religiously, as if it was your job and your life depended on it. Because for the people in the world who are the elites, who it is their job and their life depends on it, the success of the mission, their survival, the survival of the guy to the left and the guy to the right, it all comes down to how much planning had been done and how thorough and exhaustive the time, the exercise is done in the classroom and simulating in the field and whatnot before the day of, whatever it is. And as a way of life, to me, that makes a lot of sense in for preparedness and survival. And if you want to be competent to perform first responder, like rescue operations on behalf of your community and yourself and your loved ones, then yeah, you want to know where things are. You want to know how to assemble a mission-specific kit out of the array of kit that you have, which could be all seasons. It could be for all kinds of different circumstances, being in a group, being alone, being in public, being in private land, being in a national park, being in an adversarial, hostile environment, whatever those situations may be. Going back to why I feel very validated to make a 3D model, and for that to be my base and my map of the base being a 3D model, is that doing drills for procedures like evacuations, it's one thing to have a list of things to check off, protocols and procedures, checking things off a list. That's the way I've normally done it. But I want to be in with this 3D model utility, be able to say to myself, I want to walk through and visualize in the mind's eye the procedure that I will be checking boxes off while I'm doing it. But I want to simulate that, and I want to drill it, and I want to meditate on it and visualize it. And if I have this, I can do the walkthrough with a 3D model environment. I can use the software, open it up, and go, okay, I know I'm taking a subset of these items for this type of an evacuation for this duration. I need this as the day pack. I need this as the 3-day excursion assemblage. There's things that if I were to evacuate, some things would stay. Some things would get packed up to go and in the process displace things that are there normally and that have to be tucked away somewhere else. So there's a input and output procedure as well. So to me, that justifies it. That would justify the time and the indulgence to have some fun doing this now that I have the sort of master list of all of the items, to be able to then plug those lists into the locations on a 3D map of the site, and then be able to do a drill of whatever kind. It even could be a drill of, oh, I'm going to go and procure new resources, and I want to know in advance where that's going to go because I want it to move fast. I don't want stuff to be sitting around. If it's in the sun, it can be problematic. Things can get damaged. And certainly there's times where, yeah, either because of, it could be the sun or the rain or a sandstorm or whatever. If I don't pre-plan for the potential of there being time pressure, which leads to rushing and making mistakes, the more you plan, the more you drill, the more preparation you have, and you know, okay, I know I'm going to know this goes here, this goes there, this goes there. And I'm not going to be wondering, like, what did I mean when I said the front, back, side, left corner, upside down, backwards? I'm going to be able to look at it. I'm going to visualize it. I'm going to imagine myself, okay, this goes here, this goes there. And visualizing it as much as possible, physically drilling it as much as possible. And this could be something as simple as getting the morning newspaper so that you don't hit your head and trip and fall over and break your sprinkler or something. I mean, it could be anything. It could be how you do anything that could be optimized by, basic pre-planning and being organized and meditation. I used to live with somebody who was, to my knowledge, catered to by servants for the majority of their life growing up. And once they opted out of that and moved out on their own, I worked on not resenting the habits of them walking in the door, taking whatever was just purchased from shopping and just dropping it right on the floor, and the floor being this minefield of things to trip on, and me almost breaking my neck a million times coming in the house in the dark, and there would just be a new array of objects strewn everywhere. And I wouldn't say they had self insight about it. They said one time, "I know I'm a slob," and I kind of laughed, but I was like, "But I kind of understand it too. I'm not going to be judgmental about it. I'm just going to navigate it and try to be, you know, peaceful about it." But I think it was a thing of just, there was always someone there to pick it up and put it where it was supposed to go, and without that, it becomes a problem. So that's an extreme scenario. I'm not going to make any insinuation of who that person is. I don't think it would be easy to deduce it by anyone out there, but you probably, hey, maybe that's you too, or maybe you know people like that and you can't stand it, but it's dangerous. It's a hazard. I spend a lot of time, and it'll never be perfect. It'll never be enough, but I spend a lot of time just trying to meditate on the hazards that are in my environment and to mitigate them as a spiritual practice, as a practical practice. And I don't think this is the path for everyone, but for me, living the way I want to live and having a space that I'm going to, you know, this is an austere setting. And there are parameters of it that make it extremely medically problematic if things are not thought through very carefully. And I try to take at least a little bit of pride in my attention to detail when it comes to that. And, you know, if it's just me, hey, you know what, I'm doing me. If I mess up and hurt myself or get hurt, it's on me. But if I invite anybody here, I got to be responsible. Where are the first aid kits? Where is water to, where's filtered water that you could flush your eyes with? Those things to think through that, you know, are extra intensified in an austere setting like this, and certainly in the more extreme times of the year. So yeah, wish me luck as I proceed forward with this. Hopefully this was motivating to, you know, make a date with your junk drawers and have some fun and really get serious about becoming an amateur organizer if you're not a professional organizer. It's so valuable, and it could save your life, it could save you money, it could save you time, and all those things are complementary. And when you need it the most, to be able to have peace of mind and not panic because you've drilled it. You know where things are. Things are, for the most part, where they should be and not where they shouldn't be. And if you had to move fast, you could move very smoothly in a very elegant manner. And the speed could be not frenzied. The speed could be very, very graceful and very optimized. Just for me, like I said, I've got it situated. After last summer, almost dying out here, it was the worst. After that, I said, there cannot be a cluster, you know what, and there cannot be an SH show, a you know what show. It can't be a you know what show, and it can't be a cluster, you know what, to be family friendly with this. It's got to be, for me, 5 minute. There's a 5 minute evac procedure. There's a 5 hour evac procedure, there's a 5-day evac procedure, more or less. That's essentially the way I think. What can be already in place so that it does not have to be loaded out for a 5-minute evac? Okay, sort things out accordingly. And if it's 5 hours, I know, okay, there's, it's happened before. It's like there's smoke on the horizon and it looks about this many hours away. All right, I'm gearing up and I'm doing the procedure. So in the amount of time that I have, being ready for a 5-minute evac has its own set of procedures and protocols and procedures. Again, if you had 5 days, or if you have, you had 5 minutes, 5 hours, 5 days, that's, I'm not going to call that the rule of fives. I just, you know, kind of came up with it. It's not that. I'm a little more flexible than that, but I do think that way. At least you could call it I think it'd be easy way to put it would be the evacuation plans for minutes, for hours, and for days. And longer term, you could scale that out to months and years. What's the exit strategy of owning a property or of climate change affecting your property and whatnot? But yeah, anyway, that's a good show for now. I am enjoying this process. I hope you find time yourself to engage in a similar process that suits your needs. Cheers.